to know the artist behind the epic melodies, songs, and beats. Celebrating the best new music from around the world. This is the A State of Trance podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde and welcome to another A State of Trance podcast. And today we have someone in the studio that I love to listen to whenever I'm putting on Spotify. He's one of the artists that always pops up first. Welcome, Niels Hofman.
Hello.
How are you doing, man?
Doing really well.
It's a bit of a shame that we didn't record the part that we did before we press play or press record, because we were talking about touring and stuff like that. But I guess we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah. For this podcast, I would like to dive a little bit into the history of Niels Hofman and a little bit of the timeline of how you came here. First of all, congratulations on the release of the album. Let's get that out of the way. Fantastic album. We'll get to that in a little bit as well. But first, we start at the very beginning, because I've been doing a little bit of homework. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I went back to the year 2010. That's when your first release came about, Met EP. Is that correct?
That's not my EP.
Brock? Oh, that's not yours.
It's a different Niels Hofman.
Fantastic. Well, we can get that out of the way.
There too, but he's like not active anymore.
It's
not
okay. So there's an imposter.
Well, I don't know. No, so he does like Ableton Live tutorials. He's like a certified Ableton Live trainer. I think he did like one or two EPs in like 2010. But
that's it.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, so was it then the Balloons EP that was the first one?
That's correct.
Yes! That's correct. Okay, patting myself on the back. I almost had it right. So the Balloons EP was the first one in 2011. I want to go a little bit further back, because there's always a pivotal moment or a moment in your childhood or when you're growing up that you're like, hey, what is this kind of music? What is this dance music? Yeah. Do you still remember which track it was that pulled you into dance music? You were like, okay, this is what I want to do.
I think I was, when I was a teenager, my aunt gave me the DVD and the soundtrack for Berlin Calling. So I started listening to Paul Kalkbrenner. I think one of the first tracks that I really liked was Aaron.
Yeah.
I watched the movie, and then I like went a little deeper into it. I think he at that time he was releasing on B Pitch Control, so I started to listen to Apparat, Ellen Alien,
like the deep darker sounds.
And then onto Trentemøller, who was also like still doing electronic music at that time. I think that was like him and like Paul Kalkbrenner were probably my biggest inspiration back in the days to start it. And I was always doing music, just having piano lessons, drum lessons, and I just wanted to try it out. I thought maybe I could do something like this as well.
So you got the DVD from your aunt, but you were already a classically trained piano player?
Yeah.
So you got the DVD from your aunt, and you were like, okay, let's put the classical music to the side. Let's make some weird, edgy electro music.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds very logical. Yeah. So the first EP was 2011, followed by, you have to help me out, because when I was, maybe this is not the same artist, the Gas is out of Welt. It's also the different
me.
One.
This is not me.
Good. So we can put that away.
I would never name a track like that.
Because I was already thinking, okay, where did it go wrong?
No. This is definitely not me.
Was Verwünschen, that was a track of yours?
That's mine. Yeah.
Because when I saw that one, I was like, hey, wait a minute. I see a famous remixer there right now that is currently one of the hottest names in dance music, right now, Marlon Hofstadt.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, I know Marlon since many years, because we started together out on SoundCloud, and he like switched his style like I think a few times in the last years.
Yeah.
And the funny story is that when I studied in Berlin, I studied media management.
Yeah.
We were at the same university.
Okay.
So I think he was studying like PR and journalism, and we had like two courses or so together. And so we like so we like learned together at some point, but we know us together for a long time, but he's now he's one of the hardest teachers in the world. Switches style completely, and it works super well for him, I think. Yeah.
So you're both coming from the same education basically, or the same pool of you know how do you say the same roots basically.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, like same university, and we started together on SoundCloud. It was like also like a group of artists. Like I think Klangkünstler also.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. But he also completely changed. So
just a little bit, I guess.
Just a little bit, yeah.
So yeah. Let's go a little, because I'm very curious that what triggered you to start making music, because you already said that you had the DVD and you liked a different kind of music, but at what moment were you like, hey, I want to make music as well? And what were your first steps?
I don't know. I think I was always just creative. So I always wanted to do to jam on the piano as well and see maybe there's like a nice chord progression that is inspiring. And yeah, I don't know. I always had like this drive inside of me. So it was like more like I just felt like I wanted to do it and just try it out. Yeah, I think it was... It just felt like natural. I didn't really had like a goal or the ambition to like make a career out of it. I just wanted to really just
experiment with sounds put your thoughts into the machine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And did it take you a long time to get to the level that you were like, okay, I'm confident enough to send this to a label to release something like that?
I mean, the thing is I always sent it out because I thought, you know, what can happen?
Yeah.
Well, of course, like I got like a lot of passes in the beginning of my career.
It happens. I know how it feels. Been there, done that.
Yeah, but you know, I think over the time, you know, like also with the reputation that my music got with the whole streams and like YouTube clicks and I also just had a different standing. And also I also got better at production. Obviously, I mean, I produce now since I'm like 14. So it's like, almost 13, 14 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And did you educate yourself in making music or how did it go? Because we have so many different guests here in the studio. Some of them like self-taught 100%. Some went to school for it, or some just tried things out and just see what happens.
So I was, I'm basically self-taught. I was always try and error at the beginning, but when I started on Get Physical, I worked with the mixing engineer of Bukashade.
Okay.
And he he made the mixdown for Balloons.
Yeah.
And he was a very experienced guy, and he showed me like a lot of tricks, like, you know, how to EQ, kick a bass drum, stuff like that. And then I also started to read books, and what was also very helpful was obviously watching tutorials, but also collaborating with people is really important. You know, I think also with my collaborations with Ben Bomer, I learned so much. I think he's like probably the most talented producer I've been in the studio with.
He's on a different planet.
Yeah.
I think he is 100%. We'll get to Ben in just a little bit, because after Balloons got released, you stuck around with Pussy for a little bit.
Poesy.
And then in 2018, you already said, was the first time that you teamed up with Ben Bomer. And I was listening to all of your music yesterday, except for the wrong one, the Matt EP then.
We'll
forget about that one. But what I noticed in the years before you started working with Bennett was indeed a bit more electronic, a bit darker. And then you started working with Ben and it became more warm. Is that correct? Did you find your right sound when you started working with him also?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't know, but it was just... it was also just like fun to go a little more into that direction. And I think it's also, it feels very natural to me, you know, like for example, when I made the Radiant Sign, I never thought about, how would this label like this? How would this person like it? It was just me doing what I think is really good, you know? And then at the end, it was a really successful story. So
how did you guys connect with Ben Bomer?
When I was 16, I had like this hit Balloons on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I started to play my first shows, and he was at that time still living in a city in Germany called Göttingen. It's like in the middle of the country.
Okay, yeah. Middle of nowhere.
Kind of, sort of. But it's still a big, it's still like, has like 100,000 people there. So, and he and his brother and also a few friends, I think they did events, and they invited me back in 2012.
Because they knew balloons.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then, they invited me, and the thing is my father is also from that city. So I have like grandparents there. So it was like fun for me to go, and I know the city really well. And yeah, like, and then a few years later, I just found his music on YouTube, and he was like living in Berlin, and I just wrote him, I found your new music. It's amazing. You know, do you want to, you know,
work on something.
And he was like, yeah, of course. And and the story with breathing was that before I met Ben, I met Malou, and she showed me the
singer of the record.
The singer of the record. She showed me the vocal demo, and I was like, yeah, I want to work on that. It's amazing. And I was in the studio, like trying to make a song of it, but I never really, I didn't really like nail it, you know? And we were in, so
it's like, frustrating.
Yeah. So, and then like a few months later, I'm in the studio with Ben, and you know, we were just sitting there. We worked on a little track, and it wasn't really like, wasn't really good. And then I remembered, okay, I still have to like this vocal demo here with Malou, and I did like a little bit of chords and melodies, and you know, like cut the vocal a little, and showed him, and he was like, wow, that's great. And and then we made the track. I think we did like two versions.
Yeah,
like one version ended up as Second Son. So we had, first of all, it was like basically Second Son with the vocal on top.
Yeah.
And then we made the one with the, like with the tertiary groove.
So it's one track that became two tracks.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then just everybody loved it. It just happened.
I think that's so fascinating. That's something that you were stuck with for such a long time.
Yeah.
And then suddenly something in your head clicks up. Wait a minute, I still have the one laying around. Yeah. And if you didn't think about that, then that track would never have happened. That's insane.
Yeah.
So that's the lesson of this is, whenever you're working on something, never throw something away.
Yeah.
Always keep it in some folder, because you might come back to it when you're in a session with someone, and there you have it.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of dreams.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
So breathing was the... start of something very nice with Ben. And like I said, you did Second Son, which was born out of that track as well.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then, of course, you did the remix for Kidnap as well.
Yeah, Moments, yeah. Which was also pretty random. Ben and I were also in the studio together. We basically wanted to do an original. So we had like the instrumental of the Moments remix. We were thinking, this needs like a vocal, you know?
Yeah.
And then Ben came up to me like, Niels, you know, like they want me to do a Kidnap remix of Moments, but I don't make any progress on that.
Oh, and so he was stuck on that one.
He was stuck on that one. And we were like, look, you know, just like throw this on double instrumental, and it worked.
And it worked. Yeah. it was same key, same tempo, same rhythm, same feeling.
It was just lucky, you know. We were just lucky that like this. This vocal fits so well. And then of course we like change, I don't know if we like change the key to it, because I think it could have been possible that we like change the key a little bit, adjusted to it, but like it was sitting really well in the instrumental. So that's a little bit the story behind it. So it was always like little
happy accidents.
Yeah.
I love that, man. That's great. Yeah. 2020 you released your first album, which was basically sort of greatest hits. If I can say it like that. Once in a Blue Moon. Also on Poesy Music.
Yeah.
And in 2023, you released A Radiant Sign.
Yeah.
That must have been a pivotal moment in your career, that album.
It definitely was. So, I'm very happy to work with Injuna Deep. It's like, I've been sending around demos for like a long time, and and then like at some point, yeah, they just wanted to sign me. And
how many demos did it take you sending them before they signed you?
I don't know.
No, you can tell.
I don't know, maybe 20. I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was all to James, I guess, or just someone else in the team there.
Dom and Daniel. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, probably 20 demos or so. I don't know. And then yeah, at some point it worked out. And yeah, and for me, like I always wanted to. Yeah, also I always wanted to tour. So I signed with them because they all like these. They do all these events and.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and also like work with them like a little on Breathing, even though it was more like Ben, I was more like on the sideline with this.
Yeah,
but I've heard from Ben that was really good, and yeah, I just had the right feeling with it, and then
But it took you a lot of time and effort to eventually get signed by Anjuna Deep.
Yeah,
Do you get to the moment that they're like, okay, we want to do an album with you as well? Because that's another step that you have to take with a label that they put in so much time and effort into promoting you as an artist as well.
I think it was the music, you know. I think the album was very good in art, you know. We had like just amazing vocal features.
Yeah.
And I think I was just more, how to say it, like more grown up as a producer, you know, and more it was just me being better.
Yeah
That's basically the,
because you release and make music in an insane speed, I have to say, because yeah. Like I said, Radiant Sign got released and now we're here because you released Running in a Dream.
Yeah.
And in between you also released another EP.
yeah that's true. Yeah.
Phenomena EP. About that EP, you said, I wrote this while traveling over 3 continents, and where I've tried to put the inspiration from the shows of the album into my new music. How does that work? Is it something that you play a show and you come off stage and you make something straight away, or is it something that you do a show, you do a lot of live shows, something you improvise on stage and you build it into a new tune? How do you take a show and make it and turn it into music? I wonder about that.
I think it was, I don't know. Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, on stage, it's not like that, but it's more like the reactions to the music that I get, and then I see like, oh, okay, this works like this and this, but maybe I could be a little better with, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
And I just did a lot of music. It's just like a routine, you know, like doing it every day, just helps. I think I just do a lot, you know. I produce a lot of music, I write a lot of songs, and that's in the end probably like the key, because like not everything's great that you do.
No.
You know, so yeah, so I'm just trying to do a lot, and then like the good stuff like somehow like stands out, and yeah, so that's basically the thing. And I work everywhere. I mean, I was in San Francisco at the airport gate when I wrote like the melody for Lonely, like the main melody, and I still remember when I was on the, I flew back to Los Angeles then, and I like during the whole flight, I was just like listening to this melody on repeat. I was like, oh my God, this is
good.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Patting yourself on the back.
Yeah, but yeah, I have to say I was really, really happy with that.
Yeah, that's because I know a lot of, young producers are listening to these kind of interviews. And what I would love to know is that like you're touring and making music at the same time, and you say that you make a lot of music. Does that mean, for example, you live by a certain rule that you say like, I have to start a new project every day, or I have to write something new every day?
No, I mean like, so yeah, my routine is I get up. Yeah. I have like a pretty like normal rhythm. You know, I get up in the morning, like at 7.
Yeah.
So
no sleeping in. No,
just like really, yeah. But then I usually go to the gym, like, and then I work on music, so that I'm like at home, like in the Airbnb or at home at like maybe like 10 or something. And then I work until like basically the day is over.
Yeah.
I have dinner and, you know, yeah.
And that's every day, seven days a week. Well, except for your touring.
Well, not, not, not 7 days a week, but like I usually have like one or two days a week I like really take off and like do nothing, but or like meet with friends or whatever. But the rest of the day, the rest of the week is really like that. Yeah, I just work a lot. Yeah.
Does that mean that you also are more productive in the days that you're working on something? Because I know a lot of people that are listening right now and they want to make it as a producer. They work like 7 days a week,
yeah,
11 hours a day, something like that.
Yeah, I think yeah, it makes it really hard when you have like a job, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's so the thing for me is like when I studied, so I was basically done at like 3 p.m. or so.
Yeah.
And my studio was like really close by train. So I just had like, yes. So where I had my studio were like lots of offices. So it was like cheap lunch until a certain time. So I went there, had lunch, went to the studio for 4 hours, went home, you know, and then that was the next day. So I think you need to find like a sweet spot, like where you can find your time a day to like do that for like maybe 4 hours or so a day. But it's,
and don't push yourself.
Don't push yourself, but I understand it's also really difficult to do it if you have like a real job, you know.
Yeah.
So like I don't know. Yeah. I totally understand that's very difficult, and I think you have to work. Yeah, it's very hard to make it, but it's definitely possible. Like maybe I don't know, just like focus on like, yeah, like. Just have maybe focus on like what you're doing is like exceptionally good, and like
yeah,
then just like having 10 tracks that are like kind of yeah like mediocre,
yeah,
or
yeah, okay,
so how you want to call
do you
it,
make but. A lot of those like mediocre tracks that I guess you play a lot of sets, so you road test a lot, and then maybe something that doesn't really work you just scrap it, just throw it away? Or
I would say 80% I release, I would say. So it's really, yeah, I'm quite confident when I have something. So for me it's always I need something that sticks to the listener's ear, like a melody or a nice vocal. But
did you wake up in the morning and the melody's still in your head?
It's not like that. It's just I just play around, you know, with the piano, and also just like sometimes just with a MIDI clip, you know, like adjusting notes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like as soon as I have that, you know, the track is basically good.
Yeah. So, well, there you go.
So, yeah.
And I'm just very curious of how everything works with how you work in the studio for it. Because it sounds that you're very structured in what you're doing.
Yeah,
you really put time into putting everything like this time is here. This workout is very important for your mental health as well, I guess.
Yeah.
And also for your physical health, of course. So I like that. There's a structure and you really put the time in, like focus the time that you have on making music, but also not lose track out of your normal life. So you still have your friends, your other things. You take days off to spend time with friends and do other things besides music.
Yeah, that's also what I did in January.
Keeps you fresh, I guess.
Yeah. It's also what I did in January. Like I had the whole January off, and I'm like meeting with friends all the time, meeting with my family a lot, and just like, yeah, that's also really, really nice because I've been on tour like for such a long time.
Yeah,
the last year, which is amazing, but you know, you also like need to recharge your batteries at some point, and also like, you know,
without input, no output.
Exactly. Yeah. And I also feel it right now that I, you know, like this time really gives me energy right now. You know, 4 hours of sleep last night from Paris to Amsterdam at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know,
but I'm
feeling great. Like if I would have done that in December, I would have probably felt way more exhausted because you have like the whole year of touring behind
you. So you charge your batteries in January.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely do that.
It makes a lot of sense. And now you have the album out as well, of course, which is also, I guess, is it scary for you to release an album? Is it scary to throw in somewhere so much new music like that?
I don't know. It's not really scary, no. I mean, it's always, you know, you always wake up in the morning and you're like thinking, oh, okay, which playlist is this in? And usually, yeah, I'm lucky and we have like a lot of plays ads, so
yeah,
I'm not scared. So because yeah, like usually we have like one or two singles that do really, really well. And if there's like a single there that, I mean, we're lucky. So far everything's working great. But if there's a single that it doesn't really work, you know, that I've still released like so much music and like something always works really well. So
So there's always something that that works out the way you want to have it.
Right. And I think like the one, I think Diplo said that once, like if a track doesn't work out, doesn't matter because you can just do a new one.
And that's true.
And yeah, that's always how I see it. But yeah, I have to say like most of the times I'm lucky that it works really well, like on Spotify. And so, yeah,
that's what we had 2 days ago. Armin said something at lunch as well. He was like, I made a lot of really bad tracks in my career as well. But the lucky part of doing bad tracks is that no one remembers them. People only remember the good ones and the bad ones, you know. Sometimes you release something that people don't really like. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
As long as you like it and you believe in it and you put it out, that's the most important, I guess.
Yeah, right. And if you don't play it, you know, like everyone forgets about it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope that's not going to happen too much.
No.
So the album, it's out now, Running in Dream.
Yeah.
I also said this already during the live broadcast that you did one of those live streams for the last album for Radiant Sign with Julia Church, I Frisco.
Yeah.
That's something that's stunning, and it must have put so much time, effort and money into making something like that. But are you going to do something for this album as well? And first answer that. I have another question after that.
The honest answer is maybe. Yeah. I don't know yet because my schedule is like quite full.
Is it more busy now than it was for Radiant Sign?
Yeah. It's way more busy. So I'm basically on tour for 3 months and with two or three shows a week. So I can't really say it at the moment.
Yeah.
But of course we like, it was a great video and we'll like do something again for sure. I'm not sure if it's going to happen on this record, but... yeah, I think it'll happen in the future again, but I think at the moment it's like the schedule is very busy, but it will be tough to fit it in, but you know, I can't say yes or say no.
Okay, yeah. Let's keep it on maybe.
Yep.
Also in that video, you really see that you aren't necessarily a DJ, you are performing live.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things you wrote about the album as well, you say here, taking the songs I write in studio at any other place I get a chance to work. So every single show that you're doing is something different. Because you're doing it live, it's not pre-recorded. It's not you're not playing it from a USB. Why did you decide to start doing live shows rather than doing easy DJ shows?
I don't know. I think a couple of years ago, I started to realize that people want to listen to my music when I play them because they get like a lot of streams,
like a concert.
Yeah, but then I played DJ sets where I only played my own music.
Yeah.
For like a year or so, and you know, and also then when I met Ben, who was playing live, and I thought, yeah, I mean, I think at the time I was playing DJ sets with my own music for like a year or so, and then I thought, okay, like I think it would be nice to elevate this,
yeah,
and make a live show out of it because that's probably more interesting than if I would just DJ my own tracks, which is also fun, but you know, I felt like it just felt like. Yeah, I mean, my music also like works well like in the concert field. You know, it's not only like it's not like really like main stage.
It's music to listen to as well.
Yeah, it's music to listen to as well. So and that's why I think it fit well to me, and I wanted to try it out. And it's always like building a live setup is like it's like a process. You know, it takes like a few. Years I found like too like you always have to elevate it and it just like takes a couple of time like to get like to like a certain level and I think I started with it like I think like 2 years ago and so much has already changed in my setup and the way I do things, the way I do transitions, you know, like how much melodies I play live and everything. So it's like constantly changing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
constantly changing because as a live act you also have to produce a lot of new music because you know like for example this year I play like Some Cities twice, you know, and
you can't play the same stuff twice.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you can but you won't
and the thing is I mean you can change like the track order but it's like technically like, still the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So you need to always have like new music and of course there's like a basic construct of it, of course, but at the end of the day, it's changing because there's new music being written And also, I mean, that's also just from the listener's standpoint. I mean, I'm playing lots of unreleased tracks. I played a lot of unreleased tracks in the past month.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I come back, like the tracks are released and they know like what they heard. And, so it's like a different thing. But then I have like the new unreleased songs already in it, you know? And it's like constant like
it evolves nonstop.
Teasing,
Yeah. And is it like I said, you put a lot of time in putting to like the project files together, I guess, and putting the loops together. How does a life like that work for you? Like, do you have certain bits of the songs that are just running already, and then you play something over, or is it something that you really do only with loops and bits and pieces of the songs?
So I mean, like
because you have a MIDI keyboard with you, I guess. Yeah.
So I figured out like like the people basically want to hear the music how it is on the record, you know?
Yeah.
And for some tracks, I have like special live versions, but I try to like basically don't change the track structure too much, you know? I've done it like, I've tried out with like a few songs, like also with Closer on the, for example, I played like a live edit of Closer.
Yeah.
And that was like, it didn't have like this massive build up at the beginning. And I had the feeling people weren't really getting it.
Okay.
So I was
you were being too alternative, I guess.
Yeah.
Let me surprise you.
Yeah. It was like they just didn't really, is this now a Closer? Is it not Closer? Because it's so different. So yeah. So for me, I think for my case, it's like having like the song structure, how it is in the record. And then I play stuff above it. But the thing is also that as I'm playing live, you know, I can start teasing or introducing like new instruments, for example, like a hi-hat loop or a clap or even like a vocal like from the next record, which I for example do with my remix for Ahmed Fenn or my Need to Feel Love remix which has like a really cool clap which I use like in like a few other songs as well. And it's like it's also stuff like that that makes it a little different, but you
throw people off a little bit, but not too much.
Yeah, it has to be similar. And of course, like the arrangement is a little different because so like the music on record is basically designed to listen to it on like Spotify, but for live shows, I have to be a little more like faster with, you know, I can't have like, you know, you have to keep people dancing.
Yeah.
And so it's more like basses, more kick drums,
shorter edits.
Yeah.
Right. More. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to see one of those, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to come tonight to the show. Yeah. Another thing you did for the release of Radiant Sign is that you went through, I was watching this. I think I've watched it twice also. You were doing a production walkthrough on Afterglow.
Yeah.
That's something you did for Anjuna Deep, and I loved watching it because it goes a little bit more in depth and also you see what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also, I think the main thing for me is like, I have like a template, where I work with, you know, with like with a vocal chain, with a music chain, where I have like also my main melody. So I always have to write like a main melody that people remember.
Yeah.
Like I have a drum group, a bass group. I have like the same, well, not the same, but I have like I have reverb sends, parallel compression, another compressor for the kick drum and the bass drum. And I think this way, like I try to like, yeah, I think that I think this way I achieve like a style, you know, because I'm always working in this template with the same compressors and of course it's also like my personality, you know, it's like a handwriting. And I think like this way I achieve like my own sound and I also have like my key elements in there. I always try to have like a really good melodic hook. And like, of course I like vocal tracks as well. But not always. I don't always do vocal tracks. But yeah, I'm just trying. And that's also the way how I balance the stems for my live set. So I have like always like 8 stems, like vocal, the main melody, chords, bassline, FX, hi hat, snare, and kick drum. And it's basically the way how this is already structured in the template, and then I just export it. And yeah, it's just
you put it in Ableton, you can trigger it.
Right. Yeah.
I have to say, because I'm asking this because I also watched some tutorials from Ben Boehmer, and he also put it out a few project files, Ableton project files. And like what you said earlier, that you see when you're collaborating with people, you learn a lot from that. And I was watching your tutorial, but also the project file from Ben Boehmer, and it has the same kind of feel that you have like a template. This is getting very nerdy, sorry guys, but you're right that you create a sort of signature, but it also saves a lot of time that you already have your groups. And when I was watching your tutorial or the walkthrough, I've never seen so much sense in a project ever. But that's very nerdy. So
Well, sense are great because you can like glue stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have like if the hi-hat goes in the same, to the same reverb as, for example, the vocal sometimes, you know, of course you can have like different reverb sends for the vocal, but if it's just like a little bit in there, it just ties it together. And the same is also with the parallel compression where like the whole drum group goes in and then like the kick and the bass goes in like one compressor. So you glue like the kick and the bass together, you glue the drums together. Then at the same time, you glue the kick and the drums together. It's like, you know.
I love it. And that's why your sound is so fucking warm. Yeah. That's what it is. Everything's just glued together nicely. Yeah. Okay, so the album Running a Dream is out right now. I know that you're very productive, so I'm pretty sure that there's already a lot of new material written and done already. Probably. Let's not focus on that. People have to listen to this first, Running in a Dream.
They have to listen to this first.
So there's new stuff in the making, but you already said it. You're not announcing anything yet. You're just working on stuff and just see what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
In the meantime, you have so many cities that you have to travel to, so you don't have to think about all of that. People just have to listen to Running in a Dream.
Right. So, I think I will... this year will be about like also writing the album on tour. I think like somewhere next year I'll like try to basically like finish a new album, I would say.
Just see how it goes.
See how it goes. But I think this is somewhat how I see it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for answering all these questions. Sorry if you're listening and we went a little bit too nerdy. I think we could have taken it a little bit further also, but we're not going to do that. I wish you all the best for this year. The tour is going to be brutal, but I hope it's going to...
Also fun.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So it's going to bring a lot of inspiration for you as well for the new tunes.
And I'm also looking forward to see my fans and play the songs for them. Awesome. It's a beautiful thing.
All right. Thank you so much, Niels Hofman, for coming by to the State of Trance podcast. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time for a new one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Check all previous episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast portal.